Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, it's Marcia Cook, and it's A Good Story is a Good Story, and I'm not waiting that long for our music because it's not coming on or our promo, so it's just me. And we have a great show planned today. I did have a show on Monday and actually Tuesday and today Thursday, but I won't be on tomorrow, but Willow Cross will be on tomorrow, and she is coming back because she has been working full-time, and it's been difficult for her to have some time, but now she does. So, and she does the paranormal investigations, and it's going to be a great show. She's going to be on once a month, as, you know, before she was on every week, but she may increase it. But that'll be fun tomorrow. And I think Virginia has a show on Monday, and I have a couple shows coming up, but we also are going to have a show. I'll post the date when we talk to the people that are going to be on. We're going to have a breast cancer awareness show, as we always do with Carol Purcell. And that's it. I'm going to let Brian Moreland, our guest, because he has a lot to talk about, and I met him several years ago. I listened to him on a show, and I asked him if he'd be on a show, and actually we were just talking that it's been a while since he's been on the show. But he's very accomplished and very smart, and the first time I heard him, I know this is somebody that knows how to do writing. So hi, Brian. How are you?
Oh, hi, Marcia. It's great to be back.
It's been a while. That's what we were thinking. It has been a while. Just time flies. You know, the years go by fast. And I know when we were talking a few minutes ago that you're doing a book a year now, but I wanted you to talk about your new book first. Let's just talk about your new book and some of the things that went along with that, okay?
Okay.
And so tell everybody what is your new book, Your Darkness Rising, and let's hear about it.
Okay. Well, Darkness Rising is it's a novella. And it's about a poet who has been bullied and abused most of his life. And he's in love with this girl, Jennifer. And he's written this book of all these poems. And, in fact, my book has several of his poetry in the book. So
yeah, I was going to ask you about that because that's a very good touch. You know, I think that, you know, it's showing your character. I noticed that you did that there. So that's... Have you ever done a poetry book yourself, just in general?
No.
Now you probably could.
Yeah, some of these poems were just kind of random poems that I'd written at a younger age, and then some of them I wrote once I kind of got into his character and wrote them specifically for the book. And I don't claim to be a great poet or anything. But I did want to show his character. And he goes out to the lake. He's sort of this very introverted guy, and he goes to the lake to read his poems to the lake. And there just happens to be these three sadistic killers there who have been murdering people at the lake. And they start to torment him. And what they don't realize is that Marty has a dark side that they basically unleash. And then it becomes a revenge story from there. And there's some supernatural elements, too, but I don't want to give too much away.
Right. But, you know, that's what happens sometimes. I know sometimes people don't know if you're going to pick on somebody or start with somebody. You know, they could be karate expert. They could be anything. And, you know, be careful what you wish for sometimes because you don't know, you know, what could happen. And so it happens and you're not that, you know. That's a good thing of not talking too much about the novel because you really want people to read it. And do you have conversations with any of the people that read your books or do they – write to you or when, I don't know, do you do public appearances?
I get a lot of, people contact me on Twitter and Facebook and saying they just read my book or send me a review that they posted on Amazon. So I get a lot of feedback and some good, some not so good. It just depends on, you know, their opinion of their experience.
Well, that's right. That's their opinion, but that's nice. You know, I think that what people don't realize is how we like to hear what people think, good or bad.
Yes, you know, I've actually learned some things. I've actually changed some of my writing style based on some of my reviews from my earlier books.
What did they say that you needed, that they didn't like?
Well, they said that it was too slow in the middle. It's funny, look, my first book was Shadows in the Mist that I wrote I published that back in 2006 on my own, and people said that they loved how the book started, and they loved the ending, you know, basically the last half, but they said there was a part in the book that just kind of dragged, and I kept getting that you know, I saw it maybe 3 or 4 times. There was a lot of good reviews, but there was but that stuck with me. I was like, I started to look at my writing and going, okay, was there, you know, where is it dragging? And then I kind of read it and I went, oh yeah, I started to see that I added like 3 or 4 dramatic scenes that really didn't need to be in the book. And when I actually re-released it with my publisher, Sam Hain, back in, this is in 2012, I re-released the book. I actually went in and cut those scenes out, so tightened it up. And I would not have done that had I not read the reviews that kind of pointed those.
Yeah, because I think it's not a bad idea to, like, if you have a book and you know something went wrong with it, to change it, okay? You know, or change the ending. I did that with one of my books. I felt like one of my first book, My Love Changes, I felt like the ending, I wrote it first as a screenplay. And that, so a screenplay is different. So I wrote it. And the ending was not, it wasn't as happy as people would have liked. So I changed it, and it started selling a lot better. And but it's a good thing when a lot of people can't take that kind of criticism, because they'll go like, oh, every word that they write is wonderful. But I think it's a really good thing when you realize that what people are saying, and yet, you know, and you will actually change it, because I don't think there's anything wrong with changing. If you feel that you need a change, you can't like listen to everybody, because sometimes people say things that they don't know about. But when you actually feel that it would give your book, you know, a better read, then I think that's a really good thing to do. So you did that. You didn't change the cover though. You just changed the inside. Or did he change the cover?
No, I didn't change the cover. I kept the cover. Okay. I just really tightened. It was earlier in the book, like in the first fourth of the book, I just cut maybe 3 or 4 scenes out and just tightened it up. And it's actually taught me to look at my other books that followed started to get tighter and tighter. In fact, the last 3 books have been novellas because my storytelling has just gotten to where it's just very tight. I can almost tell a full story within 100 or so pages.
Well, I believe that is really kind of true, because I learned that when I was doing screenplays to cut, you know, because I think that there are sometimes, you know, it's hard for some people to cut, but the thing is, sometimes I read it out loud, and when I go, you know what, I don't need this, you know, and you realize sometimes you don't need that much, and sometimes even when they have movies that are 4 hours or 3 hours, you know, unless it's going to be like a 2-part or 3-part, I said, nobody needs to have like a 3.5-hour movie. It just doesn't, you don't have to, you can cut, you know, and I learned that with screenplays, and that is why my Virginia stories are there. It's a novella. It's 3 short stories together. And I think the way the world is now, people like that.
Yes. You know, I also have a background in, I studied screenwriting in college, and that taught me, you know, screenplays, as you know, you have to hit a certain word page count.
Yep.
You can't go over, 120 pages.
It's even less now.
Now
it used to
like
be like to
90,
120,
right?
But they'd rather see 90 or they, you know, because every page is a minute and, you know, it costs money.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think that, you know, years ago, if you wrote over 120 pages, they'd go like, oh, no, this person does not know how to write a screenplay. And so then that's how I learned, too, because, you know, you really have to cut and you have to be less descriptive. But it also, it just teaches you a lot. If people think they can't write a script, it's always a good idea to even try just to see how that is, because everybody wants their book to be a movie. You know, hardly anybody that, you know, that I've ever interviewed, everybody would like their book to be a movie. And I think, knowing Hollywood the way I do, I think if you have a 90-page book, 100-page book, I think that they're more apt to read that. If they look at a 400-page book, they're going to go, oh, I don't know if I could finish that. Because sometimes they take just the book. They take the book. I mean, I've had that with clients, where they just took the book and they went out and tried to shop it. It is harder to shop that way because then they have to do a screenplay, you know. But
that's right. They
got
to hire somebody to adapt it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. I mean, that's a hard job to do. So I think that it's not a bad thing to do the novellas, because I do think people that might not have read a book will read it if it's a shorter book. They just get bored. In
absolutely.
Hollywood, it's 1, 2, 3. Where they, if they look, when they look through a script, if it's like after the 10 pages, I used to, when I first started out, I used to send just 10 pages for my clients, because if they don't like it after 10, if they don't like the 10 pages, it doesn't matter what you have after that. They're not going to read it. They don't care.
That's true.
Yeah. Believe
me, I've
done a
lot
of rewrites. I know. So you're tighter now in the writing, and that's a good thing. But we talked about focusing before we got on the air. Now, you owe a lot to your editor. So you want to talk about that? Because that is I think it's such an important part when people don't realize how important a good editor is to a book and to the author.
Yes, my editor at Sam Hain is Don Diaria, and he's really well known in the horror field. He's edited so many, probably hundreds of novels now for some of the best horror authors in the business. And it was, I remember when he first picked up my second novel, Dead of Winter, and released that through Sam Hain, his new horror line. I got to have lunch with him, and he was like a celebrity. So I was sort of in awe sitting across from him having lunch.
Because you knew who it was, right, yeah.
Yes, and it was an honor for me. And before that, I had only had one book published, and that book took me 4.5 years to write. And then Dead of Winter took me two and a half years. I mean, they're both historical, so I did a lot of research.
Yeah, historical does take time, though. It really does.
It does.
You have to be right. You can't fool around. You can't fool around with that.
That's right.
You got to really know your thing.
And I was also learning, kind of teaching myself how to write a novel. It's just a process. You just got to learn how to, you just got to write a lot to kind of learn how to tell a story. And so then I sit down at lunch with him, and he basically tells me, now he's releasing, we've already agreed that he's going to release Dead of Winter later that year. And he said, what I would like from you is, I'd like to see a book a year from you. And, basically now I had, for the first time in my life, I had an editor willing to look at my next book. All I had to do was write it. And that was very inspiring. And it, kind of hung a big golden carrot out in front of me that if I just sit down and push myself with discipline to write a book, I now have an editor and a publisher willing to look at it. And so I did that.
That makes a world of difference, though. It gives you a goal, though. I mean, it's not, you don't feel like you're writing for nothing. You're writing for somebody waiting for you to finish.
Exactly. It made it very tangible. Suddenly I was an author on a career path rather than just an aspiring author who had a big dream and was just writing, with the hopes that someday somebody would publish it. Now it was kind of like, okay, you've got a publisher now. Now it's up to you to keep producing, new books for this publisher to release. And so I just...
Well, you have to stay out there because your fans want you to keep having books.
Yes.
If they like a book, they want the author. And a lot of times people don't understand one thing, though. It doesn't... Like, people will say, oh, it's great to write. I think I could write. Whatever. But it doesn't just... You just don't sit down and it just doesn't happen. it is hard. And because I am bad, I go back and forth, and I just want to make sure I didn't forget anything because then I can move on. But, people say there's different ways to do it. But it takes me a while because I have to go back and make sure that everything matches because I'm like, I want it to be good.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to make sure. And it does take time. You just don't sit there and it comes right out of you and you go, yes. Although, unfortunately, this is what happened with the industry. A lot of people started writing that way. And they just did it and they expect their editors to write their book for them. And that's not going to happen.
Right.
The editor can fix it and make it sound better, but having an editor write it is not how it's not how any of us really as authors want it to be. We want to be the ones writing the story, not the editor.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and I've gotten very meticulous with my writing. I probably write 50 to 100 drafts before I ever send it to my editor. And I also have a writer's group that I meet with every other Tuesday, and I'll read some chapters, 2 or 3 chapters to them and get critical feedback. So I'm getting all the feedback from them. They're, I'm luckily I've got a group of authors who are published and
Yeah,
and
yeah,
good
because,
editors.
But sometimes, you know, sometimes you get in a group and then, you know, people that have not written too much, then they'll start giving you advice and you're going like, well, what have you written? Okay. I mean, you know, you
yeah.
have to know, you have to know this to be able to talk to someone and listen, because you're listening differently than you would as a person that's just reading a book. If you're an
mm-hmm.
author, you know what you're looking for, you know, and that, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing a lot of rewrites. I mean, I can't help myself because I always say, oh, yeah, I'll be done soon. And then I go like, no, I'm not, and I'm not done soon, because it just takes time to write a good story. It does.
Oh,
yeah.
You
just need to go over back and forth, make sure the characters, you know, and sometimes what I do is when I do it, I don't know if you do something like that, but you write when, and then all, I write some of the characters down and their traits, because sometimes when you've written a lot of books like you have, you have a lot of characters. So you don't want
yes.
any of them to be the same, anything like each other. So you have to really give them a life of their own. Is that what you
That's
do?
That's right.
Do you have that? Yeah. How do you
yeah,
start?
I've done
How do you
that.
Start
I've...
your novels? How do you start?
I usually start with an idea for a prologue. And to me, I need to get into a scene to start to really feel the fictional world. So
yeah.
I'll have a general idea, and I may sketch out one page. It's just some just it's almost like
right,
doodles.
No.
It's just like
yeah.
okay, here's how I think it could start, here's the main character, you know, it's a doctor
yeah.
or it's a soldier. Here's you know, here's a possible ending. And then I'll go write the and usually I start to kind of get an idea of how you know, how to set up the mystery. And I'll
yeah.
write the opening scene and once I write the opening scene, now it's a tangible world for me to kind of go
right.
in and out of.
It's reality
and,
to you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes reality,
might,
the world you're in.
Yes. And then I like to, you know, usually I start with the main character in their, they're kind of in their natural world before they get pulled into the, you know, whatever it is that, the, you know, I write horror so and mystery. So before they get pulled into the mystery or the thriller part, I just really set them up in their kind of regular world, so you kind of see who they were before they go on their journey.
Like you write dark
and,
horror, like we talked about this. I remember even years ago we talked about the same subject, because I think it's difficult to say if a story is horror or if it's sometimes very dark and edgy thriller is deep dark,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I think that people sometimes they go like, oh, I don't want to read horror, but you have storylines in yours and you have characters with feelings, so it's not just, you know, a slash book, you know. So
right.
I think that that's
oh, yeah.
the public doesn't, sometimes it is very difficult because people will say, I don't want to read any horror books, but they're watching things on TV that are horror that they don't even realize it.
Yeah, and they're also, you know, they might be thinking, they might watch a slasher movie that really has no heart and soul to it and think that a horror book's going to be the same experience.
Right.
And a horror book have so much more depth of character and theme.
Yep.
And mine always, there's always a light versus dark element to it. So there's,
yep.
you know, there's a lot of good and positive things that kind of counterbalance the dark negative stuff.
Right, so it's not just poor. It's not just like where someone's going to be, like, you know, from all the blood and guts, you know. Because even when you watch TV, like even last night, I watched this new show. It's called Code Black, and that it's a hospital show, like an ER. And I was a lab tech. You know, I drew blood and I worked in hospitals, but there is a lot of blood. Okay, and they're watching that, and they don't realize that is. You know, so much more horror than they think a horror story is, because you're watching,
yes.
you know, you're right in there when they're doing the operations. This show is taken from a documentary, I think, and it's a new series, but there's a lot of blood, a lot. And I'm not afraid
mm-hmm.
of, you know, I'm not worried about blood because I took blood from people. But, it, you know, I've noticed it, and I think that's why people, it's unfortunate when they say that we don't want a horror story. So, you know, I know because you write a lot more than horror. It's more deep, dark, edgy thriller.
Yeah, and I like, you know, I also write about family. So all my
yeah.
characters are interconnected. You know, there's family drama kind of going on in between the horror mystery.
Right, so it's not, so it's just, it's, I think that's, see, and that's the other thing with Amazon and other, it's hard when you classify books, you know, because Where do you say, like, this book is a horror book, this and this book is a deep, dark thriller, and you can get people reading it that might not have read it because they don't, they just, they don't, they have to put in what, like, if they put in a genre, they write mystery or thriller. They don't, a lot of them don't write horror, read horror, and that's, they're missing a lot. The same thing with romance, that, you know, every book isn't that sexy. Their romance can be, you know, it, and different forms. So people go, oh, I don't want to read romance, you know, so that's a problem, you know, for people. But when you, at least you have a group, so do they, are they writers of all different kinds, you know, different genres?
Yes. In
fact,
I'm the only author who writes scary stories in that group. Yeah. There's a YA.
Oh, wow.
Kind of a.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, young adults, she writes supernatural, magical stuff, kind of fantasies, YA fantasy.
Yeah,
there's
fantasy.
A sci-fi author, there's a thriller mystery author, and then there's a more of a, I guess it's chick lit, or I don't know if it's chick lit, but it's more drama that deals with, it's more, I guess, books that women kind of more are drawn to.
Right, and that's a hard, that's a tough genre, because
yes.
I have a lot of romance shows, and, you know, even when they are, you know, erotic, they're not that erotic. I mean, they're just, it's love scenes, but that's not the whole book. That's what happens, is because the reader now has a tough time because of that, you know, because they don't know, they'll automatically turn off to something that may be really good. And if you just, you know, like years ago, they would call things just drama, okay? And drama can be a lot of different things, you know?
Yes.
Which could, you know, and I think they, you know, they just think of slasher sometimes, and they really shouldn't, you know? And that's, I hope someday that changes for people, because I do think it's hard, you know? And years ago, the keywords were different. Now, once the, you know, they have different keywords, and they did. I think when Amazon used to do it, you could keep changing keywords. Even the authors could do that on their pages, but now you can't do that anymore because a lot of people took advantage of things. You know, that's why this market has changed. So, so in the last 5-6 years, how do you think this market, what do you think is, if somebody's just starting out, what should they do? Because I know people that are listening, you know, we have a lot of listeners on the archive side. So, What do they do if they want to write? What advice would you give them as a writer?
Well, first of all, I would give them the advice to go take some writing courses and read as many books as they can on writing and really develop their craft before you start publishing. There's a lot of people who are just kind of like they write a book and just put it out there,
yep.
But then it gets a lot of bad reviews on Amazon.
And then they wonder why. Right.
Yeah, and then it's really hard to get a career going with the second book. You know, all the publishers are going to look at that first, all the reviews of that first book. And so I say the first thing to do is really learn how to write a great book, and especially if it's fiction. Now, nonfiction, if it's a business book or something, sometimes it can be more, you know, it's more just the writer kind of sharing their wisdom.
Right.
But
for
fiction, if you want to be competitive with the other novels out there, then you need to develop your craft and get a lot of feedback, maybe even get a mentor, hire an editor. I hired like 2 or 3 editors when I was first learning to write to edit my manuscripts, and each one of them taught me something. You know, they pointed out, you know, where I was writing bad dialogue, or they pointed out where my romance between the characters was not realistic. You know, I actually hired a romance author to help me with my horror book.
That's a smart thing. Because you have romance in it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I did. All my books have characters who like each
real
other
characters.
In some romantic way.
Right.
And I want that to be realistic and authentic. And I'm not trying to write romance as a genre.
No, but that's
why
it's part of life, every part of it, okay? And see, that's one
of
the things, because that's what people go like, oh, I don't think I want to read romance, you know, no. They think it's all, you know, and Harlequin, they've changed a lot, Harlequin, so it's not what it used to be, okay? Because Harlequin years ago used to be like, you know, you had to write a certain way for Harlequin. They gave you guidelines, and it was years ago. And it's not really like that now. People write more of a story and backstory. You know, you have to know your characters and things like that. But it has changed. But the people that are readers, I think that's the problem. They sometimes don't pick up a book because of the genre they think it's in. And I don't know what could. I hope that changes someday, that people will be, you know, trying new things. And a lot of times they don't, because they automatically, almost like when I used to, you know, we used to send out screenplays, they'd go, no period pieces, none. Okay, so now there's a lot of things that are period pieces on, you know, HBO and Showtime, because that wasn't there then when they started to do that. But they have specific needs, and they'll go, I don't want this, you know, they didn't want period pieces because they were too much money to, you know, make. But now a lot of the stars are actually producing their own.
That's so right. I guess it goes through trends.
Yeah. So I mean, that's what you have. Now one of the newer trends I like is the audiobook. And you want to talk a little about the audiobooks, because how do you feel about that?
I know a lot of people who don't read books, but they listen to books. They love.
Yeah.
They drive a lot, and they prefer to basically listen to novels. Stephen King, Dean Koontz, and you know, a lot of the best selling ones on audiobook. And it was always my goal when I first self published my first book, Shadows of the Mist, and decided that I wanted to be a published author. I kind of had this dream that all my books would eventually be audiobooks too.
Wow.
Because it adds a whole new dimension. Now you've got somebody narrating it. It's a different experience to listen to somebody else, a professional, kind of telling the story.
I love it. When I hear my children's books, I think, oh my God, I'm thinking, who wrote that? It sounds to me so much better. I mean, because it's just as the author, certainly, because you are listening to every word, and I think it's like a teaching device. I think kids and adults can learn how to write even when they're listening, because I think when you listen to a book, you can see where the chapter begins and ends, and you know, because that's a huge problem, I think, for a lot of authors. It was for me, you know, figuring out how to end the chapter and get to the next chapter, but you realize that your reader's smart. They get it. If it's a month later, they'll get it. You know what I mean? But at first, that's a problem for people, you know, how to get to one place to the next without making a transition, you know. And so, but when you listen to an audio, I think you can catch that more when you're listening to it. So you're happy with your audio books.
So it was my goal to see my books as audiobooks, and I found out that there's a publisher called Audio Realms that was actually releasing quite a few horror audiobooks, and I got to get to know the publisher, the man who runs it, and told him
Audio Realms.com.
They have a good selection of horror books and other books. And he read a couple of my books, and he said he was very interested in, and I ended up signing a multi-book deal where he's releasing all my books on audio, and he's already released three of them.
I think it's good when you have somebody that you've done with. I mean, I have one of them that did three of my books, the children's. I like that. You get to feel like, you know, that it's part of like a family, like that you're, you know, they're in this with you. You know, so you got the same guy. That's a good. So it's Audio Realm. I don't know that. I have not heard of that. Audiorealms.com. I'll look that up.
Yeah.
So is it out all over then? Is it?
Yes. They release through Audio Realms, the Audio Shop, Audible, and Amazon.
They do on Audible. Okay, because I saw your book on your Amazon page. Okay, so they do that. So that's a good thing, because that's where people recognize, you know, a lot of people don't recognize some places that we know, you know, and because most people do recognize Amazon. Do you use Smashwords at all?
I did in the beginning, but no, I don't now.
Yeah.
And,
because Smashwords, we had Mark on, you know, and... But Virginia and I did Virginia, you know, the part of World of Ink. We had him on from Smashwords. And, you know, he works so hard and they have a lot going on, but people don't get it. They just don't, you know, it's, they don't want to go in there and get, even if you could give them a free book, they don't want to go in on Smashwords because they find it difficult. They have to sign up. They don't want to do that. They don't want to just sign up for things. So I hope someday that changes. And that's really a problem because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of books on there, and some people do really good on Smashwords. I mean, they do. They do great, you know. But I don't know. We had him on, and, you know, he's such a nice guy, and they really did it for a great reason because a lot of people, you know, weren't going on Amazon or they just had an e-book, you know. So it was a good idea. But most people I know, if I send them a code, they never use it. What is this? You know, it's too big.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's a lot of places now. You know, so how do you do marketing for yourself? What do you do?
Let's see. Well, first thing I do is I contact a lot of book reviewers. There's a lot of horror blogs out there who have their own readership for my genre. And so I'll contact maybe 50 book reviewers, and I've been fortunate that about 30 of them respond back with a yes, if they'd be interested in reading the book. So my first goal is to get my as many reviews out there. That way I'm reaching an audience that I don't know or see.
Right.
And then I'm very active on Twitter, and I've just surpassed 10,000 followers, so it's over. I think it took me like 5 or 6 years to build that up.
And let's talk about that for a minute, because you know I've had people on from Twitter, you know, that talk about Twitter, and it's one of the most important things these days, and a lot of people hate it. They absolutely hate it. So when you started, how did you start, and how did you build it? So that's a huge amount of, you know, that's a big account. So how did you?
It is.
What did you do to get that?
Well, I initially started following people that were like-minded, you know, I also started, you know, I tweeted a lot. I shared it, free information. I had a blog, and so I would share links to articles and things like that. I would retweet other people. I find that, you know, Twitter is really, it's a world where, you know, if you do nice things for people do nice things for you. If if they're advertising their book and you retweet it, well, then later on they might retweet, you know, when you post an ad about your book and a lot of people will follow you as well. You just suddenly start seeing people following you, and I just follow them back. So, if I think there's somebody that I would, you know, think is a nice person.
And you do all your own tweets, and you do your own tweets.
I do all my own tweets, yes.
Right.
And whenever
because
I
you do,
contact...
Yeah, you do that because you want to see what you're tweeting?
Yeah,
I'm
also a one-man... my marketing is just me. I'm not... Yeah. I don't have an assistant or anything, and so when
I
post on
marketer.
Facebook
you're
or Twitter...
You're a really good marketer, though. So you know that's why people should listen to what you, because you have you do, you're a good marketer. You've always been, though, even in the beginning.
I just recognize the importance. You know, no one's going to know about your book. There's so many millions of books on Amazon. You can't just put a book on Amazon and think that people are going to land on the page. You have to connect with people, and I don't just do constant ads. You know, I actually talk to people. I build relationships on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus as well. And it's something that I've done over months and years. And I make it a habit to get on social media at least once a day, just kind of check to see who's tweeting or, you know, tweeting me.
Do you have a time that you'd go on? Is there a time?
Just whenever I have a break. Usually in the morning when I first sit down and start my day. I'll maybe check my emails, then Twitter and Facebook, and respond to some. I get a lot of people now tweeting something to me, so I respond back. And then lunchtime or in the afternoon, I might do it two or three times a day on a, if I'm at the office, or at least once a day. And it doesn't take long to tweet something, and you know, that just kind of keeps people knowing what you're up to. And
I think the readers like, but you have a lot of books, and you've done it the right way. So you have people waiting for your books. So I do agree with the fact of getting books out right away, you know, within the year, because I think, you know, I've made mistakes that way, and I'm trying to rectify them. You know, I've done shows for like 6 years now, and, you know, I spend a lot of time doing that, plus I write, plus I do other things, and the problem is that if they like your book, like they did my Virginia stories, I should have had a book out already, but then I went in between now, and I'm having another book that's not my Virginia Templeton series, and I should have done it right away. But, you know, and that's the thing. So I am trying myself to focus in on, like what you said, you have to keep doing it, you know, because I write every day, but it does take me time, but then sometimes I get, you know, I decide to change my website, to change the cover of my book, and I've made a lot of changes, which people know when they listen to me. They know I have, and I say the mistakes I've made because those, I think they are mistakes. I can give good advice, but I don't take it sometimes. And I think what you're saying is knowing that you have to have a book out a year makes you focused and get that book out, and don't, you know, you don't go on to something else. You focus
That's
on
right.
that project.
It keeps the momentum going with your career.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, you got readers ready for your next book,
But they like your book, so that's what happens, though. So that's when you're tweeting, because a lot of people, there's a lot of people that come on the show, and they do say the same thing. I've had tweeting experts come on and talk about it, but a lot of authors hate tweeting. They just hate it. But mostly the people that have come on that are successful at this say that it's very important. And I may not love all the social media because I much prefer to sit and write, but I can get unfocused. So I just feel like, you know, you have to make set guidelines like you're doing now. You know,
yeah.
And I think that's, you know, one of the things that I think I need to do, you know, and that's why I tell people the mistakes that I've made, changing covers, changing names, you know, and sometimes you just have to be satisfied and say, this is it. This is the book I wrote. Bye. Move on.
That's
really
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me a while to get to that point where I could let go of a story, but I finally got to the point where, and maybe it's because now I do 50 to 100 drafts. By about the 100th draft, I'm like, okay, I think it's
enough.
As good as I can get it.
I know.
And if my editors and my agent and my people in my writers group are all saying it feels like it's done, then I let it go.
Because it is done. Right, it is done, and you got to move on because, you know, sometimes.
And it'll never be perfect.
Nothing is perfect, though, you know, and then, you know, but when people read it, they have no idea. They like your story. That's the end of it. You know, they don't read it. Like, if you're reading it hundreds of times over, but when a reader just reads it and it's edited, they go through the story and they like it. That's it. Either they don't like it or they like it, but that's it. They don't do what we do. And sometimes, you know, you go like, oh, I don't know. Is this book good already? Because you've read it so many times and you don't even see the mistakes anymore because you've read it so many times. I do a lot of things that you do because that is time consuming, but I think it makes my story better. And I feel like then when I read it afterwards, I go like, well, I needed to do that because you have to make sure that everything blends. If it doesn't, it's not a good story. The reader doesn't know what's happening. So do you do Facebook ads?
All the threads have to tie together by the end.
Yeah. Do you do Facebook ads?
Do I do what?
The Facebook ads or any of those ads, you know, like the.
Oh, no.
Facebook.
No, I had a buddy of mine who's an author in the past week. Just he kind of posted that he tried the Facebook ads and he ended up spending a lot of money and for very few click throughs. He said it was not worth it. And so, no, I won't be doing Facebook ads.
Yeah, see, I think at the beginning, like even for the shows, we did some, you know, ads years a couple years ago, and then last year we did a few, but now they don't, you know, what's happened with Facebook is it really doesn't, you don't see the shares anymore. I don't know if people are seeing it, you know, seeing things or not. None of us know that anymore because it's very different. Because years ago, if you put something out, you'd see 50 shares, 60. Now sometimes you see like 5, 6. And I think what's happening is people don't want to get that involved, so they don't click on to share. But that doesn't mean they don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to share it because they don't want to get involved. You know what I mean? They just want to move on. You know, they just scroll down. So I think people, you know, you need to put things on there, but it, you can't be disappointed if you don't have like 100 shares, you know, like it was.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I mean, years ago with Red River, we had like, you know, that's what we did. We went over and over. So do you think there's too much advertising? Is it ever too much?
I mean, yeah, it probably feels, you know, I think it feels like too much, but I've kind of learned to tune it out.
Yeah.
And,
But,
you know, I kind of, you know, we wouldn't have Facebook and Twitter if somebody wasn't paying for it.
Right.
You know,
yeah. No, this is true. And the other thing is, you know, when you're watching TV, I've noticed something, and, you know, I've just been very interested in knowing about this subject, is when people, you know, let's say on Showtime or, you know, every time another show is over, they keep playing the same promo. And I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe that's not so bad because, you know, sometimes you feel like when you put stuff out, you go, should I keep doing this? I mean, are people, you know, going to get, because some people get really uptight with it and then they just get rid of you, you know. And
uh-huh.
So, but sometimes if you don't do it all the time, then some people will never see it because all day long is a whole day for, you know, different people come on during the day. So
right.
If you don't have enough out there, then they might not see anything of yours. If they just scroll and not share or anything.
Right, because the homepage of Facebook and Twitter is just a constant stream. It's
yeah.
being updated by the second.
Yeah.
And,
see, I think
you
there's
know,
so many things now. I mean, there are so many things that are different, you know, and time-consuming. But I think that what you're doing, you're definitely on the right path here because you're very successful now as far as having the book once a year and knowing in your head that you have a place for it to go, though. See, that's the other thing. When you know you have a home for it, that's a whole different thing. It's like
yeah,
you're
writing
so different.
Yeah, that's when the game changed for me.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you write how many hours a day, or do you just write when you can? Or do you write, you know, if you're in the morning, you know, like early or late? Or I know you said you
yeah.
did your Facebook and everything in the morning. When do you write? Do you have time set or?
Yeah, I write on the days that I write. Now, I don't write every day, but I do. I write in sprints, you know, like for 2 weeks. I'll write a lot for 2 weeks. And mm-hmm. I'm very creative in the morning. I'll get up at 4 or 5 a.m. when
wow.
I can barely open my eyes. And that's when my head's just in kind of this sort of dreamy state. But I'm very creative during those early morning hours. And,
yeah.
and I'll write till noon. And then take a break. And if I don't have any, you know, work to do for other people that day, then I'll go back to writing. And I'll just kind of write throughout the afternoon and the evenings, right before bed. And so for 2 weeks, I might write 8 to 10 hours a day. And then I'll reach a point where I got to go do, you know, I got to go work for somebody else. I'm not a full-time author yet, so I still have a freelance career. And so I may have to jump on a client project and
so what
for 2 weeks.
So what do you do for your clients?
I do book editing and book design. I design
great.
Book covers. And
I didn't know that. I didn't
interior
see that.
Layout.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't. I kind of keep my you know, when I promote horror fiction, I kind of keep that separate from my my client projects and I'll pick up maybe 6 or 7 book projects a year for other
that's great.
Usually authors who self-publish. You know, they need someone to edit their book and design
yes,
design it and kind of get them set up for on Amazon or things, so I'll do that.
So you do that for people. That's a great thing to know. I didn't know that because we've never talked about that. That's a good thing because there are people that really need help out there, and if they have the right editor and book designer and get it upright, then they have a chance at a career. Without that, they don't have a chance because if they don't have all the steps, you know, even when you talk to the libraries, it's very interesting, you know, calling for, you know, to see if the libraries want to have, you know, an author visit or things like that. They, you know, being independently published is a killer these days more than it was even before because I think they've seen so many people self-published that do such a bad job. It ruins it for the people that really edit and really have it edited great. I mean, you know, and have the cover design and everything is right. But I think it's going back to the where it was before because so many people have done it without, like, an editor, and they just threw it out. And that's ruined it. That's ruining it for the indie authors because there are so many people that really throw a book out fast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally recommend that people, anybody who wants to self-publish, that's, you know, you go the professional route. And that's what I did when I first self-published Shadows of the Mist. I hired an editor, and we worked for like 3 months editing the book. And then I hired somebody to do the interior layout to design the print book so that it would look. I wanted my book to look, I could go put it on a shelf at Barnes & Noble, and you wouldn't be able to tell whether it was a self-published book or not. I wanted,
right.
And so I also hired an illustrator to paint the cover and a cover designer to do the layout of the fonts and text. And
it does
so
matter.
I think
it does.
It's
you
worth,
know, even with right, it matters. It you know, I think people
does.
Don't realize how much that matters. You know, they all think they have, you know, the publishers where they can publish themselves. You know, and on, with the computers, they're very, you know, now the computers you could do so much on it. But if you're not a professional, the cover doesn't look right.
That's right.
And that you could spot. Now, do you have Kirkish reviews?
I had one of my first book. I haven't had one of any of my recent books.
Because we, you know, Virginia and I, we've been discussing this on our shows because, you know, I just can't, you know, it's very expensive. And but it's very unsettling that sometimes now when you call libraries or places, they want a Kirkish review. And I find that unbelievably unfair because that's expensive, is the Kirkus reviews, okay? They used to do
that's
free
right.
reviews sometimes. Now it's almost $500. We had them from Kirkus years ago, Virginia, and I had a show with them. And, you know, by the end of the show, I felt like, oh, I really, maybe I should do this. But it's so much money. I mean, it really is a lot of money. You could do a lot of marketing and a lot of other things for that much money. And, you know, that's why now we're asking authors if they really have that because people are having really great careers without Kirkus reviews.
Right.
So I was wondering if you had one. So you're surviving in this world without one and in very
yeah,
well.
Yeah,
I
don't buy
add.
Reviews. I just go for the ones where people just, or, you know, most reviewers out there will read it for free and give you an honest review.
Right. Exactly.
Based on their opinion.
Yeah, and they've taken reviewers off because they think they get paid. So I don't know how that works because I know several reviewers that are excellent, but Amazon took them off because they felt like they were getting paid. So I don't know how that works that Kirkus makes, you know, is able to get the reviews out for 500. And some very good reviewers have lost, you know, the chance to post. And I don't know why that is. So that's why we're asking people now if they have Kirkus reviews, because after making phone calls now to author visits and they're asking for a Kirkus review, I find that, you know, unfair. So I'm just, you know, that's why we're asking people. So you seem to have a career without it. So how's that? It's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't been a barrier. So.
Okay. That's a good thing. All right, you know, so what else would you like to tell everybody about where they can reach you and how they can find you? You know, about the rest of your books. So we don't forget about that now. We should do that.
They can go to my website, brianmoreland.com. That's BRIANMORELAND.com. You can find me on Twitter at Brian Moreland. I've got 6 books out now that are horror, supernatural thrillers, and they're available in ebook, paperback, and audiobook.
Yeah. isn't it nice now, all the things that we can do? I mean, the audio, with the audio, hardback, Kindle. I mean, within 6 years, this is what everybody can do now. Because it wasn't really before then, because when I first started doing shows, ebooks were just really becoming important. And that's not
that's
that
right.
long ago.
Yeah,
you
ebooks.
Know, I mean, yeah.
Same with when
well,
I released
first started
my first book.
How many years? You said 8 years. You're about 8 years you're writing? Eight or nine? Nine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2006. In fact, in 2006, I didn't even release an ebook. I just released a paperback. And I didn't even know how to do an ebook. I don't think they were.
Right.
I think
I know.
Kindle
was
just started to take off at that time.
Because I remember on some of my shows, people would be talking about, well, we think ebooks are going to be popular. But then Apple, that was the end. And Kindle and the iPad, and that changed everything, you know, at that moment, right at that
moment.
It
did. You know, it's funny that at first, I kind of tracked my sales, and at first, my e-books basically doubled or tripled my paperback sales. Now it's kind of evened out. It's about 50-50. And so I don't know. Maybe people are either going back to reading paperbacks or – or the
that's interesting.
Maybe the
that's
ebook.
I sell mostly ebooks. Yeah, that's interesting.
I can't say that across the board for you know the industry or anything. I can just I'm just looking at my own books and noticed, you know, it was like wow, you know, ebooks are really outselling the paperbacks. And then that was in 2011, and then now in 2015, I'm selling a lot more paperbacks. And it's they're when I kind of add them up, I'm like, okay, it's about the same.
But that's interesting. That's it. Because I mostly sell ebooks. And my kids' books, the problem with the kids' books is if I go to schools or if I have a book signing or things like that, it works out. But the ebooks for children, it's not, you know, because people want their kids to read and, you know, hold a book. And but I do think now with the audio books, I think they can buy the book and then they can listen to it at the same time. And I think that's like a tool that the kids can use to learn how to read and listen. You know, and I think it'll help them a lot. When, a lot.
Are your children's books interactive, or
no,
are they just
not? They're just stories. Yeah, they're stories, and you know, but the interactive books, yes, they do. And if I write another one, maybe I will. You know, I just that's what happens to me. You know, I do the children's books, and then I really love to do. You know, I'm doing my screenplays. Actually, my Virginia Templeton character from my, now I changed the title with Shameless Sex, Virginia Templeton was from a screenplay. So, and right now, I had a screenplay that was, you know, optioned once. And so I am doing it, Grand Central Station, I'm doing it as a book. And I have like 11 screenplays. So I hope to do each one as a novella because I think then I actually have a better chance sometimes of getting it in the hands of, you know, production companies because they're more likely to read it. That's why I'm saying to you, the novellas are good because I do think that's a very good thing to with production companies because I know that they will not read 400 pages like I said before. So I think that's why I'm doing most of my screenplays in novellas now. You know, that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I think novellas is great. I think, you know, I feel there's a strong, strong market for that. You know, I do too because what I think that, like you said before, like within a certain amount of pages, they get the idea and it just kind of goes smoothly. There's no downtime. The downtime is the killer. The downtime is a killer because and it's like in a movie. You know, like sometimes people, you see if they go to the movie, they like the beginning and the end. In the middle, they're kind of like some of them fall asleep. They don't stay up for it, you know. They go out and get popcorn, you know, whatever. And I think that middle part, so that's when there's two. Sometimes, you know, you don't need as much as you think you do. People get it now. So that's why it's a good idea in a novella. So I, you know, you've done a lot. We've covered so many different things because I know you can. That's why I'm so glad you came on the show because you know about all these things. And I think over the years, this takes time. So new authors can't know all this right away.
Right.
And they can't be disappointed.
Yes, it was a lot of trial and error, and and I was a student of writing for many, many years. I took a lot of classes. I went to workshops.
I did. Me too. I went to workshops. Do you go to a lot of conferences now?
I haven't been to a writer's conference in a few years.
Yeah.
But
I haven't done that. You know, I keep saying I'm going, but I don't. But you know, like what you said at the beginning, that's what I did. I used to go sit at the. What I did is I went to the library. I picked up every book on writing I could carry, and then I sat down. That's what actually what I did. I sat down and I read them. Because I wanted to learn, and that's how I did it with a screenplay. Because writing a screenplay, you know, you can take a class, but you really got to do one to figure it out. But I read every book I possibly could, and then I felt like I, you know, and I ended up with Sid Field as one of the ones that was fabulous, and that's how I learned how to write a screenplay. But I agree with that's what you do. You sit down or you go on your computer and look up writing and figure it out. But you just can't sit there. Even if you take classes, they don't teach you that. You know, you write maybe creatively, but when you're reading books about writing, I think you learn a lot.
Absolutely, and I still continue to study books about writing. I may read one on how to write a plot, how to write theme, how to write. You know, I also read books on how to write screenplays because I think there's a big crossover between storytelling for the big screen and storytelling for books. Yeah. At least from my style, I really
have
like scene-driven stories.
Have you read Sid Field? Sid Field.
I read Sid Field back in college
years ago
when I was taking screenwriting.
It's still the best way to write a screenplay. That, you know, whatever I learned was a great way to write a screenplay. I mean, you know, I have option screenplays, and now there's maybe one coming in production. We're seeing about that. But, you know, I think just the way he taught people at the beginning with the little cards, I mean, all of those things, I still use some of those things, you know, because I think – you know, there's so many different ways out there, but I just found him so, it was very easy. It was like a formula, how to do it, but then you find your own formula naturally. But, you know, so you like screenwriting. That's interesting. So that's, you know, I love screenwriting. That's my favorite. It's just very tough out there.
Yeah, I wanted to be a screenwriter coming out of college. I was a film major. And then, I was sort of doing both. I was writing fiction, but I was also playing with some screenplay ideas. And then I met the writer who wrote Shakespeare in Love. He just won the Oscar for it. You know, I got to have dinner with him.
Gwyneth Paltrow? You mean Gwyneth Paltrow was in that one, I think? Was she in that
Yes.
one? Yeah. Okay.
And he said something that, you know, kind of opened my eyes. You know, he said that, he'd had many, many failed screenplays before he finally sold one.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized that, you know, I could write 10 screenplays and maybe get someone to buy one or option one. And maybe, a lot of luck, it might one day get made into a movie where people could see it. Or it might be easier just to write books and publish them. And then it doesn't take a big budget like it. You know, it takes a huge budget and a lot of people to kind of get on board to make a movie.
Yes,
but a book, I can basically write a movie that plays in a person's head and it doesn't take a big budget to make it. And,
Visually. It does teach you visually.
Oh, yeah.
And that,
absolutely.
That's really great for people when they're reading a book to visualize it. And if the author can do that, this is great. That's why all of that has helped you sell your work because of that. Because I believe that screenplays is such a good way to learn a craft of writing because it's hard. You know, people go, you know, it's not easy to do, but it's so you visually see it, and that's what you want when you're writing a book because you want your reader to see what you see, and that's a hard thing, but that's a good.
It also teaches you. Also teaches you how to move a plot scene by scene. You know, how to tell a story with scenes where dramatic scenes where characters are actually doing some kind of action and saying you know, they're talking to one another. So you're not just in their heads the whole time.
Right.
Or
and that's hard to
describing
do. It's not easy to do. But when you learn how to do that, I had this author, Mary McNear. She did the Butternut series, and you know, I'm listening to her work on audio. And she's with Random. I think I don't know that her agent is trying to get her, you know, as a movie, but I'm telling you, as what I was as an agent and a, she, her books, I see them exactly. She writes that way, and I think that when people see the characters and want to be at the place you are, or in your case, maybe they're afraid to be where you are. You know, I still think of you when you were on last time. I think this is what I meant to say before, is that you were in the woods. You had a bad connection. And I don't know what book you were writing, but you were in the woods. And every time I think of you in this dark woods by yourself on the phone doing the show. And I can't help it. And then, because your books are in the woods a lot. So I mean, that's what you, yeah. That is part of you. That, you know, every writer has their own thing. I think that's something that's in your head. And then you said, oh, I'm at the woods. I'm going like, oh, and I always think of you in the woods in the dark. And I'm thinking, I'd be scared to death even to be there in a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember that
cabin.
At all that you were there? You were in the car.
Oh, yeah. I was sitting in my car in the dark with all these woods around me. And I had to sit in the car because the little cabin I was staying in didn't have
cell
coverage.
That's what I think of. Think of that.
But I drove like 20 yards up the hill and parked near the gate. And yeah. I was able to call out. But funny, tonight I'm actually in the city of Dallas and I can see buildings and downtown Dallas.
You move around a lot. So that's how I remember you always. And that's why your books fit exactly when I think of you. And, you know, actually, because I know, you know, that's why I want people to hear what you had to say, because, you know, you are a dark thriller horror type writer. And I think that the genre that you do can go in different genres. Like you say, you have romance. So I think that I'm so glad that you came on, because I think that when people listen, they'll, you know, the genres matter. And, you know, and I think a lot of people don't know how to, you know, maybe express what genre they're in, because I think it's difficult to, you know, in that field, you know, to really pick and get your readers to like what you read, you know, and not just look at you in the genre. They like your stories and just forget about
the
genre.
I actually like books that blend genres. I grew up reading a lot of Dean Koontz, and he was really good at blending. I mean, he'd have humor in there, he'd have romance, he'd have action-adventure thriller, and then he would also have some kind of horror element in a lot of his books, too. So he knew how to kind of mesh it all together where, you know, it's just a fun story, and that's what I aim
and
to write. It's
that's
just a
right.
fun
and that's
story.
Really hard, and I know you do that, and that's really important. So people, when they're listening, they can realize that you can't. It was, even as a writer at the beginning, it was hard for me to, like, when I wrote, I was writing a thriller, and I realized later on that you can't put funny lines in a thriller, you know, because it's okay to do that. But at the beginning, when you're starting, you figure, oh, you can't do that, but you can. And that makes it really good. Like you're calling it blended. I think you're right. You blend the genres and it works. So I think, you know, I'm so happy that you came on to explain all this. And, you know, naturally on World of Ink Network, we always have all the shows posted, you know, when we have a little thing where you can go in and they can keep hearing all the shows. So the shows stay active, you know, for forever. I have like 5 years of shows. Oh, yeah, they stay active forever. So people are always going in and listening. And it doesn't matter if they listen at this time or whatever, because people are very busy. And lately, with all the things on TV, people are taping like 5 shows at a time. I mean, there's so much that people are watching TV a lot now, a lot more than they did for years. And so we're going to see you.
The writing of shows has gotten better.
Yeah. Oh, the writing has gotten really better. Really, it does. And, you know. And so hopefully we're going to see one of yours as a movie. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to get you
audio. Oh, me too.
Yes, I know. Well, I hope you'll come on again. And thank you so much for coming on and talking about all these subjects, because that's why we had the one-on-one, because I knew you know all these subjects. So thank you so much, because I think this will help people out there, you know, if they have problems, because, you know, sometimes it's good to hear all of these things, you know, and know you're not alone out there. Because we are. Sometimes you feel that way, but we're not. All right, thank you again, and good luck.
Well,
and
thank
good
you too,
success.
Marcia.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Thank you.
You too.
Have a good night. Thank you. And Willow's show is tomorrow. So good night, everybody.